in FMCG, every brand is going ethical. Every sector has an ethical alternative. In watches, it barely exists. So there's a chance to disrupt that category by becoming more ethical. But also, I think if you've got an ethical watch on someone's wrist, that's firstly a constant reminder to that person, let's make some ethical choices today. People being reminded is a good thing.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, I'm catching up with a past guest, not about the business they were building last time we caught up, but about their new e-commerce project. Guy was last on the show in 2022 talking about scaling his pet food brand to £12 million. He's back this year because he's begun a new e-commerce journey, aiming to create the most efficient e-commerce company possible. Now, I don't often interview people in their first few months of trading, but I think this is a very worthy exception because A, Guy is super insightful and really knows his e-commerce stuff, and B, what he's trying to do and aiming to do with the new company is really interesting as well. So listen in to find out about building economically and efficiently, a little bit about the watch market, about building sustainability in from day one, and a fair few tidbits of what he's been up to because he's still involved with the business he sold as well. So lots of interesting bits and pieces, real thought provoker this one. So sit back, enjoy, and make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on his top tips and my own take on this episode. Now to introduce our special guest. Guy Blasky is the founder at Detrash Watches, where he's on a mission to both create the most efficient e-commerce company possible and be a force for good by creating sustainable products and supporting 1% for the planet and surface against sewage. Guy founded Detrash in January this year and started selling in June exclusively via its Shopify store. Hello, Guy.
Hello.
Great to have you back on the show. How have things been? Because you've done quite a lot since we last caught up.
Yeah, it was good to catch up and find out it was 2022 when I was last on. And I think, like you said, I quoted the Pooch & Muck, which is my first company, quoted turnover at 12 million. And I think we're 2.5 times that now, to do the maths. So the growth there has been incredible, which I'm not taking the credit for. And the growth has been incredible. My kind of exit journey has been really good. And setting up Detrash, which, depending on what day of the week you ask me, is either a small side project and a hobby or something I'm going to grow to multi-millions and sell to the swatch route. But I can't decide which. At the moment, it's just a hobby.
So you've built a hugely successful e-commerce business, done what sounds like one of the most perfect exits ever because you're happily still involved a couple of years on and they are growing fast and doing some really cool stuff. Why go back to the beginning and start all over again with a business that isn't FMCG linked like the pet food business is, a business that isn't subscription-based, which obviously the pet food was quite heavily subscription-based? Why do something new now when you could just be enjoying life?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a good question, and it's a good thing for people who have exited or are thinking about exiting to consider. I read a study somewhere, it's about people's quality of life and what happens to their quality of life. And actually, one of the key things was when people retire, if they have playmates who retire with them, because most people obviously retire at retirement age, and if all their friends then retire, and then they've got people to spend time with. But when you sell your business at 45, you've got to do something. You can't do, you know, I'm also training for an Ironman at the same time, which takes up quite a bit of time. But you kind of need to do something, and you need to do something with other people. And while you can do things like have fun and go running and play golf or whatever, there's not that many people of your age to do that with, which is one of the reasons why I enjoy staying involved with Pooch & Muck and helping the team at Pooch and Mutt, much more in an advisory role now and a non-exec advisory role. And then one of the reasons for starting Dtrash was to kind of do something and have a bit of fun. And I quite like that. I like the idea of raising some money for charity. And I think this way of raising money for charity is probably a better use of my skill set, which, you know, like, let's say I could grow this. I've signed up for 1% of the planet and we're giving money to Surfers Against Sewage. But let's say I enshrine that into the company and I can get the Swatch Group to buy this and I can be selling millions of watches a year. Well, that's a huge amount of money that would therefore go to charity, which is far more than anything I could ever do on my own.
It's a lot more than you could get running a jumble sale, a coffee morning, or even sponsorship for an Ironman, isn't it?
Exactly. But also, even if I kind of invested some of my exit money and was willing or wanted to give that to charity, investing the same amount of money into growing a platform that then gives to charity should mean more money goes and it makes more of a difference. Obviously, there's a risk of that not working, but it should do.
So why watches?
There's the passion answer, which is I really like watches. I really like design. And actually, watches are basically all about design and brand and making stuff. And yeah, one of my fondest memories when I was started Pooch and Mutt is the first time you go into a shop and you see something on the shelf. And that was kind of was always my motivation, was to kind of get products into people's hands. And actually designing a watch and having fun with it, you can have fun with it and it goes onto someone's wrist. And also I think what your listeners will find unbelievable, which I found unbelievable, is if you look at Domestos to Method or Cadbury's to Tony's chocolate, like in FMCG, every brand is going ethical. Every sector has an ethical alternative and a mainstream ethical alternative. And in watches, there is not, like, it barely exists.
Mm-hmm.
People are barely thinking about it. And I think so there's a chance to disrupt that category by becoming more ethical. But also, I think if you've got an ethical watch on someone's wrist, that's firstly a constant reminder to that person, you know, let's make some ethical choices today. And I genuinely believe that if we're going to solve the climate crisis, it's lots of small things that are going to add up rather than one big thing. So people being reminded is a good thing. And also, watches are about kind of projecting a personality and projecting how you want to be seen in the world. And I don't think people want to be seen, like a Rolex, for example, is about projecting wealth. And I don't think that's the way people want to project themselves anymore. And actually, this gives you a chance to project yourself more as a good citizen
mm-hmm.
in the world. And I think that's more how people want to be seen. So it becomes a conversation starter. So that's the passion answer side of it. The other side of it is if you imagine... So interestingly, my first kind of supplier order, so Pooch and Mutt, and my first supplier order at Dtrash were both about £30,000 to £40,000. Obviously, 15 years apart, but still around that much. Now, my first one at Pooch and Mutt was two trucks worth, and how many pallets that is,
mm-hmm.
which involved storage and logistics and everything else. My first one with Dtrash, because we kept packaging minimal for eco reasons as well, fits in my cupboard at home. So I've now got something that, you know, sits in my cupboard at home, has no shelf life, doesn't take up any room, is really easy to store, really easy to send out. So is the kind of business that you can do as a hobby. Theoretically, I can sell kind of 10 watches a year and they're still fine. You know, in 10 years, someone can still buy that watch that's on my shelf now and it works perfectly.
I'd love the... I think that point about the scale, the physical scale of the product and the AOV, et cetera, makes so much sense. But the other thing which really got to me with doing that was you were saying about the watch being on the wrist and provoking the conversation and being that constant reminder. On my wrist right now is a watch made by a previous podcast guest, Solios Watches from Canada. And I specifically bought it to provoke conversations with other people as much as to remind myself. So they go, oh, that's a nice watch. Where did you get that from? I got it from there. It's a sustainable watch because of X, Y, and Z. And I think we should make, those of us who want to try and push things forward should be making buying decisions along those lines to provoke the subtle conversation, not the hitting someone around the head.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's called D-Trash. It's not that subtle. And we've got ads out there that say made with trash. And we get loads of people who are like, oh, why have you put trash on it? I wouldn't want to wear something that's made with trash. And it's like, because you don't get it. And some of them I've argued back and I was like, yeah. They're like, why would you put trash in the name? I was like, because that's the point. It's made with trash. It's made with recycled stuff. And they're like, oh, that's quite clever. Like, you're not, but yes.
So this is a side benefit of being, I've built one big one, now I can be rude on social media. You know,
there's
to
a
the
lot
customers.
Of that. Yes. There is a lot of, I mean, we have an amazing customer service team now at Pooch and Mutt. I'm not a good customer service person.
To be fair, I would not function particularly well. No one would want to put me on the phones or on the social media, I don't think, either. Let's get into the sustainability bit a little bit deeper, then we'll look into the efficiency side of things as well. So, although they go hand in hand. For you, is the sustainability and changing that piece within the watches market, is that about the physical product? Is it about the company? Is it about what happens to the product later in its lifespan? Or is it about the purpose part of supporting surface against sewage?
Multiple answers to that. I think one of the things which, because I know you have a lot of FMCG listeners, so one of the things that irks me about a lot of FMCG is, and this is a big thing in pet food in particular, is a lot of people talk about recyclable packaging. So for example, there's a huge amount of recyclable, in inverted commas, packaging in pet food, which is you got to take it to your supermarket and get it recycled. And actually that doesn't get recycled because people don't do it. And then people do put it in the recycling and it contaminates the recycling. So there's a lot of kind of greenwashing, which annoys me for a start. And also, I think it's the wrong way around. I think if we champion goods made from recycled, and Simple is a really good example of a business that was, they were the first people to go with a kind of dirty clear packaging, but it was clear that's because it was recycled. I think if you champion made from recycled, then the recycling gets done. You create demand for recycled, then more recycled gets done. So a big point of D-Trash is saying, look, you can make something that's beautiful and designed and nice and will get people talking out of, you know, post-consumer goods. And I think that's a conversation that we need to be having more. And I think more packaging needs to be made from recycled, not recyclable.
It hadn't really occurred to me that the more recycled materials we use in our products and our packaging, the greater the demand for recycled materials. And therefore, it kind of, you're pushing from the beginning of the process, not creating lots of things that could be recycled at the end, but you're creating the demand for the recycled product right at the beginning, which is, and is there an element of product creators should be putting a bit more time into going, okay, we've got this piece of plastic, could we make that from recycled? We've got this piece of metal, could we make that from recycled? Is that part of the change we need to do?
That is 100% part of the change we need to do. I mean, apparently there are recycling companies out there who just have warehouses and warehouses of plastic either ready to be recycled or that has been recycled that's not really being made into anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at carpets, for example. Carpets are a really easy thing to make out of recycled plastic, even as it goes down, because plastic degrades every time it's recycled, but carpets are a big thing. Now, at the moment, wool is what is called premium in the carpet world, and plastic is not premium. If somebody went and started making a premium recycled plastic carpet that was highly in demand, then you're going to get everything recycled more. And the more people want recycled, the more people the manufacturers are going to have to source recycled materials, the more they're going to encourage recycling and make it easier for people. And that chain kind of has to happen to make it work.
And the interesting thing about that is a change in the overall ecosystem, the overall impact, that doesn't require any group of consumers making any different buying choices at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they have to go, oh, we're going to get an inferior carpet, or we're going to get...
It's actually probably better carpet. It's probably better stain repellent or whatever. I don't know a lot about carpets. But I know how hard it is to get a stain out of wool carpet. But
yeah, it's like we... and you know, your watches, they look like any other watch.
Yeah, and they are. I mean, they, you know, the steel is surgical grade steel. It's just, you know, we have specified that it's 80% recycled, and other companies are making the same kind of grade steel. They're just not specifying the recycled content, and they could easily do that. There's lots of people making fabric and nylon straps out there, but we're making ours out of ocean plastic, which is not a hard thing to do. It's not hard to do it. People just need to go, and why wouldn't you? And actually, they're super comfortable.
Yeah. Okay, I said to everybody we would talk about the efficiency part, because I think we're in a space at the moment where efficient teams in particular, and efficiency behind the scenes and a drive for profit seems to have become the new holy grail in e-commerce. Everyone seems to have suddenly gone in the last 12 months. Growth at all costs? No, we want profit, profit, profit. And there's a lot of increasing amounts of people looking to be more efficient within their teams. You are the sole employee currently at Detrash, and you're obviously still doing some work for Pooch and Mutt, and I'm sure you're enjoying yourself as well. So how are you structuring things? How are you organizing things? How are you running things so that you can be as efficient a business as possible, so it doesn't become a problem or a challenge?
So you've got getting stock in. Mm-hmm. You've obviously got getting sales for stock and then getting stock out, effectively. Getting stock in and the design process is kind of fun for me anyway, so I enjoy doing that. So that, like, however long that takes, and however many iterations of design and researching materials and stuff, I enjoy doing that, so that's not really a problem. And also, you can do that any time of day or night. It doesn't really matter. Getting the sales is interesting. So I started, there's an amazing CrossFit shoe company called Rad Global, who do a limited drop model. And I started by copying their model of going for limited drops, building a bit of hype, going for limited drops. And that kind of worked at the pre-sale a little bit, but then just kind of stopped working. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the fun things of doing something myself where it's just me now, and it doesn't matter if I get sales or don't get sales. I've recently stopped that model. But I didn't want to go to just an always on, you can order whenever you want, because that's quite inefficient. And then, you know, someone places an order, they expect it to be sent that day and they want it in 2 days. So I've started a model where the sales are always on, but we're having what I call a dispatch windows. So at the moment, when we're recording mid-August, I've said there's a dispatch window at the start in the first week of September. So everyone can order now, but it won't get sent out till the first week of September. And, you know, if they're in the UK, they'll get it 2 days later. And if they're in the US, they'll get it 2 weeks later. I think that's one of the differences with watches and dog food. It's like, you know, if a dog food customer doesn't have the food when they want it, they'll switch to another brand because the dog needs to eat.
Yes.
With a watch, it's not the same. If you don't have it for a week, you know. And also in watch world, it's, wait lists are a common thing, and, you know, placing an order and not getting it for a year, 2 years, 3 years is normal in some brands. So that helps it be efficient to just say, right, place it and you'll get it in the future. You can secure your watch and you'll get it in the future, which is great. And then, so that's on the kind of sales side. And I am the only employee, but I do have someone doing PR for me freelance. And I did a lot of the Meta ad stuff myself, and I just bought someone else in who can do that better than me to look over it. So I've got a bit of help on that side. And then the dispatch side. So in the early days of Pooch and Mutt, you know, I was getting orders. I was kind of coding some Roman cart code into WooCommerce and downloading a spreadsheet and writing out envelopes and taking them to the post office and then eventually uploading that spreadsheet to a third party pick and pack. And now, like I said, I've got them in my cupboard. I get an order, I press a button and it goes into DPD. I press a button, a label comes out and I stick it on a pack, and I press a button and someone comes and picks it up. So that is incredible compared to 17 years ago, 16 years ago.
The tech has definitely come on to make it an awful lot easier to be more efficient and leaner with things like the dispatch process and everything so much easier than it used to be. Is there anything, you know, having built a complicated business, because it evolved, you know, it was doing 12 million. So there were lots of things that it was worth paying for because of economies of scale and so on and so forth. Have you had to hold yourself back from implementing things because it's just not worth it yet, and made things more manual?
I have what I'm told is called a scarcity mindset, but actually just means I'm really tight. So I could put more money in to it and get it to scale. But I also, you know, and part of what I'm doing is because I do some mentoring. I do mentoring pro bono with Imperial, and I do some paid mentoring, and I do some advising and non-executing and stuff like that. And the majority of the time, I'm teaching people how to bootstrap. I've had clients, someone come to me and they're like, right, I'm trying to raise 200 grand and this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do this. And I sat with them for an hour and I worked out how they could get their business going for 3 grand that they had and could get it going and could become operational. And it wasn't exactly how they wanted, but it was a good enough version to then prove your concept and then actually go out and raise money as a business, not as an idea. And that's generally what I try and help people with. Of, I don't think people should take outside money in case they need to. And I don't think people are aware what comes of taking outside money and what that means and how that affects what you want to do. So a little bit is I will need to put my not money where my mouth is with this. And I kind of want to show that, like, yeah, it'd be easy to hire a team. You know, I now know from Pooching Them Up what team we would need to hire, who they'd need to be. You know, we have a very well-connected team that could help me hire and do everything properly. But I don't really want to do that because I'm doing that anyway. Like, I'm doing that day to day at Pooching Them Up, where I'm, you know, as I said, I'm still kind of on the board and advising. I still have that business. I want to kind of start it again as a proper startup.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So Guy, are you ready for the top tips?
Yeah.
Okay. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Right. So last time I was on, I went very philosophical with this answer. And I still will stand by my everybody should read William B. Irvin's The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. However, I'm now talking to Chloe and Mike Stevens, who's a friend of mine. His book, The D2C Playbook, is on the shelf behind. So I have to recommend Mike's book just to keep him happy. And because it is also a really good book. And also, I wrote a review on the inside front cover of it. So I would definitely do that. But I'm going to give you a couple of others as well. One is a book called Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman. And that is about the visionary integrator principle and how you have two people at the helm of a business. One for the vision and one to make it happen, basically. And I think that's incredibly important in helping a business grow. And I'm going to throw in some shade and negativity. Do not spend your time as a startup reading Byron Sharp's How Brands Grow. And I don't care who else has recommended it. And if you want to grow from 40 million to 50 million, it's potentially a good read. But it's not a startup book. And it annoys me how many people quote it. And Byron Sharp is aware of this. I've debated it with him on Twitter.
So public shade going on there out in the open. But yeah, it's often as good to get a no, don't read that yet. That's not for you at this point in time as it is to get a recommendation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a book about, you know, if you're Domestos versus Flash, for example, and you want to know how to compete, it's reasonable at that. But it gets overly quoted for people who are at startup stage. And actually, I have a blog on my website on guyvlasky.com, which is whether he's right or Seth Godin's right. And I sent it to Byron Sharp, and he was quite disparaging of Seth Godin, and I'm a big fan of Seth Godin. So I go the Seth route, not the Byron route.
There we go. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
By the way, I'm really bad at answering questions directly. So this is something somebody else said to me, and I say to lots of other people, and I'm now doing it myself, and people hate doing it. But the answer to this is ask your top 50 customers. Build a relationship with your top 50 customers. Say to them, where did you find out about this product? Why did you buy it? Like, do some qualitative research with people that you know buy from you. Because there's no point in me saying LinkedIn's brilliant or video is brilliant. And also, don't chase traffic. Because if you want to get, you know, I set up a Advantage Plus campaign on Meta and got massive traffic from like 65-year-old people who had nothing better to do. Like, I could see the analysis afterwards, and I was like, they weren't buying. They're not the customers I want. Nothing wrong with 65-year-old people. Just not what we're going with the brand. But I think the answer is learn from your customers, the people who buy from you, because those you want more of them.
Love it. Customers always have all the answers. You just have to listen to them. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Again, I'm not answering the question properly, but the answer is learn budgeting. Learn how to budget properly and report against budget. And when you're at a certain size, instigate something called 445 accounting, which is a way that you can break a year down into weeks, which means you can set targets against weeks and report against weeks as opposed to months, which makes things easier. Fancy tools are irrelevant if you can't get the basics right. And I talk to so many people who don't understand the basics of budgeting, and it ain't sexy, but that's going to make or break businesses as they scale.
Simple but super effective advice. Thank you. Finally, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I'm going to say get registered with 1% for the planet. And it's not necessarily all about carbon either. But it's about kind of doing the right thing for the planet and getting everything right. But I would register with 1% for the planet because they kind of hold your feet to the flames to make sure you're giving money to charities. And they also vet the charities that you're working with. And, you know, as you said, Detrash, we're working with Surface Against Sewage, which has nothing to do with carbon, but I'd rather not swim in shit.
Oh, indeed. A brilliant organisation. Super cool organisation. And I love the fact you give us alternative answers. I'm always up for a not quite answering the question, but still super insightful.
So. Problem is I never answer the question properly.
We forgive you here, Guy, at the very least. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media if they want to get in touch or buy a watch?
Go to dtrash.com. We are dtrash.watch as well, actually. That's dtrash.com and dtrash.watch on Instagram. And I should know what we are on LinkedIn. I don't know. Follow me on LinkedIn and you'll see. And if you want some rants, you can follow me on Twitter. But LinkedIn... I've just read Gary Vee's book, which wasn't in my book recommendations, but he talked about LinkedIn a lot. And actually asking one of my customers, the last customer I asked who bought from us, where he found out about Detrash was on LinkedIn. And people are nicer on LinkedIn than most other platforms because their bosses are there.
They are. And I have to say, following Guy on LinkedIn is a great thing to do because he shares lots of interesting things on there to do with e-commerce and business in general. So well worth a follow. Guy, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Mastermind podcast. It's been lovely having you back again to talk about starting all over, I suppose. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Great. great to catch up with Guy. They're definitely one of those episodes where you're going to leave with some big thoughts milling around and a few little clever tactics as well. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what he does with Dtrash. So I highly recommend following him on LinkedIn to find out. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to the things we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. Or you can use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the correct page on the website. When you get to the website, you can, of course, add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the many other things I share to help you improve your business. If you want to hear more of Guy and find out more about what he had been up to at Pooch and Mutt, then you want episode 396, where he's talking about how he scaled Pooch and Mutt to over 12 million, where he will also be having a rant about packaging materials and the recyclability or not thereof. And if you want more on early stage startups, then head to ecmp.info/startup, where you will find a page on the website that details all our episodes with startup founders. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to try and succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.